From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 5th day of August 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. In agricultural news, the NCBA continues to come under fire for possible misappropriation of beef checkoff funds, and Russia is in the news for more than its drought-stricken wheat-growing regions. That nation has decided to add some fine print to a poultry trade agreement struck with USDA just 3 weeks ago. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also in this half hour, we'll hear a commentary from the Farm Bureau and from meteorologist Pete Levitt. In the second half hour of our program, we call it The Farming World. Stacy Revels of the National Pork Board will be here to explain the Pork Quality Assurance Plus program. If you can't stay with us for that interview, you can always hear it online at willag.org. As part of the Closing Market Report, our program is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago, on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby September wheat at $7.85¾, up the 60-cent limit. December at $8.12½, up 57½. The hard red in Kansas City at $7.80, a settlement price there, up 53½¢. Corn pit now, September contract, a $4.03½ settlement price, $3.25 higher. December at $4.18, up 3. The March at $4.32 higher. May corn at $4.36¾, up 0.75¢, and the December futures of next year in the corn pit at $4.34½, down 2¾¢. August beans at $10.55, up 2. September $10.34¾, 5½ higher. November beans $10.29, up 4¾¢. And the January $10.34¼, up 4¢ for the day. August bean meal $3.13.60, up 2¢. August soybean oil at $41.26, down a dime on the afternoon. August live cattle futures $92.90, 25¢ lower for the day. The August feeder cattle at $112.70 were 90¢ lower. The September down $1.25 at $112.67½. And the August ling hog futures in Chicago at $83.80 a hundredweight finished the day $3 lower. The October there at $76.02½, down $2.92½. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $82.03 a barrel, down 44 cents. Ethanol at $1.74¢, up 2¢. Natural gas at $4.60, down 13¢. Heating oil or diesel fuel, $0.015 lower at $2.18¢. And the gold futures at $1,197.20 an ounce, settled $3.50 higher. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 24 points lower at 10,655. And the U.S. dollar now trading at 80.83 is down 0.06. The CRB index at 277.66 is down 1.32 on the afternoon. Here's the weather forecast for the area on the rest of the day. Mostly sunny skies. The highs in the upper 80s. The northwest winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. It's 87 degrees now outside the studios here in Urbana-Champaign with a heat index of 92. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, lows in the mid-60s, light northwest winds. Friday, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-80s, north winds at 5 to 10 miles an hour. And then Friday night, mostly clear skies, lows in the low 60s, light east winds. Saturday, mostly sunny, highs in the upper 80s and light east winds. And then Saturday night through Wednesday of next week should be partly cloudy most of the time. The lows in the 70s, highs around 90 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the agricultural weather forecast when they get to the bottom of the hour. We'll talk with Pete Levitt, agricultural meteorologist. He'll take us through all the weather for the Midwest, the nation, the globe, and in particular for Russia and the wheat-growing regions of that area of the world. Stay with us for agricultural weather right here on the Closing Market Report.
Time. Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Taylor & Martin Auctions, which is holding an auction of over 100 pieces of large, late-model ag equipment from John Deere, Case, and Cat on Tuesday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at Progress City in Decatur, Illinois. Online bidding is available at tmilive.com.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. He's on the phone line to take up the agricultural futures markets. Giddy up, Dan. Let's go wheat. What do you think?
Oh, it's doing what it needs to do. It has to reflect a much smaller world supply. There's still a lot of speculation exactly how much reduction in world inventories we've had is still an ongoing process, but clearly the weather situation was serious enough in the former Soviet Union countries, especially Russia and Ukraine, that exports had to be suspended, at least for the time being anyway, until they get a little better handle on actually what they have to sell and how much they've already got committed and whether or not they'll be able to make their commitments.
And I thought that was rather interesting because Putin came out and said, we're going to close this down for Russia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine would be a different legislative process. But that came after Glencore, I believe, which is a large operator in that area, suggested that they shut down the export market. And they did it for all grains and all exports, starting fairly quickly. That looks like that's been confirmed at this time. The wheat market jumped on that news and the idea of that news yesterday and then again today. Will it follow through as we get
into
tomorrow?
We had an emotional day here today. So, it wouldn't be surprising to see some consolidation, a breather here going into the weekend tomorrow. I mean, it was a day very similar to Monday. Monday was a big up day. Then the market sold off and closed down toward the lower end of the range. And I think Tuesday was a down day for wheat after being up like 45 cents. But corn and beans were more of an unchanged day. So we might see something like that. But, the charts that I'm looking at on wheat tells me that there's a ways to go yet. I just looking at Kansas City September wheat futures. The initial objective that I had here about 3-4 weeks ago to go back into the 719 area was exceeded here this week, and now the new upside target here is 916 for the wheat futures. So that would fit pretty much for Chicago. Basically take the wheat complex back into that $9 range. That's what technicians are going to be looking at. That's what index funds are going to be probing for. We'll just have to kind of see how the fundamental picture kind of unfolds here over the next 30 to 60 days.
Well, what do you think the fundamental picture might look like in total world wheat ending stocks? The last time we rallied really big time was when we really pushed the market higher. That would have been in 08 with the 08 crop. And the ending stocks at that point were 165 million metric tons. Then we jumped to 193 for 09. And at this point, the last WASD report in July said we were at 187.05, and that was down from the 193 that they had put out in June. How much lower do you think it is than that?
Well, my guess is that you're going to have to bring wheat production down maybe up to 30 million worldwide. If you would do something like that, well, then subtract that out of the carryout.
So you're ending stocks at 187 in July. So you're talking down 30 million from that, 157?
Well, we don't know yet for sure, but we've got we've got some private people are talking about another 10 million, I guess, 10 million from July numbers, I guess.
Down to 170.
Yeah. It would be down about 27 from a year ago. That'd be about what it is, 28, 30 from a year ago's production. This year's production right now looks approximately to be about 10 million tons less than the July estimate. Now, that's ongoing. So, I mean, that can easily go. But my guess is probably that's all July. That's probably what USDA will probably knock it down, $10 million, maybe $15 million.
It should make the August 12 report really fun to watch, because we'll get numbers on the size of the U.S. corn crop, the U.S. soybean crop, and then we'll get hopefully some updated numbers on the world wheat supply and what's been happening in Russia and Kazakhstan and those former Soviet states.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I'm not too sure they'll be worth the ink they're printed on. You know, the August crop reports, I think the trade's pretty well got the fix on that. I mean, it's pretty much of a population situation, and then multiplied by average year weights and whatnot, same way with stock counts and all that kind of stuff. So that's why, you know, the trade's kind of looking for USDA to at least come up with the numbers they've been using on the July report. And you've seen, you know, in FOMA Economics now, I guess they came out here at,
66
on the corn, a little higher than what F.C. Stone did. I think they were, 65.8 or something like that?
I'd have to go back and look, but something.
Yeah, I think they were 65.8. And then soybeans, in FOMA came out at 43.5, and Stone was at 44. So, I mean, I look at those numbers, and I would say, how can the report be bearish? Because I would be very surprised that USDA would go above those numbers. I mean, last year was the highest August estimate they came up with, and it was, 158.5 or 159.5 on the corn. And then they had to raise it a little bit as the season went on to 164.7. 164.7 looks high because of the stocks. So my guess is that they may even have trouble going much above where they're at, because I don't think they would want to go way high and then have to backpedal. That would not look good. So, you know, I see the Infoma number. I see the FC Stone number. I think the trade is willing to accept anything 164, 165, I think. So I think a lot of that's already been worked in. So the key, I think, is going to be looking at what the World Board maybe does with demand changes. And I think there's some speculation that export demand for U.S. wheat could go up 200 to 250 million bushels. I think export demand, I think the trade is looking at numbers anywhere from 175 to 200 million bushels up on export demand for corn. So, you know, even with a larger yield estimate on corn, it doesn't look like the balance sheet's going to change a lot, and that's provided the corn yield does go up.
All right. So what do you see then? We went to 439 today in the December corn, but we dropped back pretty dramatically, only 3 cents higher, settled at 418. What kinds of numbers are you looking forward to?
Well, the initial target that I had was 443. We went to 39 here today, so I guess that's good enough for government work.
You're in the private sector. I'm in the government.
but if you had a sell order at 440, you didn't get filled. You know, that's the way it goes.
Right.
Well, I think the market held up pretty good. I mean, the tons of grain was moved today. I mean, if you talk to any elevator or anything, the market offered farmers $4 cash corn. So you had a lot of movement. So the market, I think, based upon the type of volume of hedge pressure that came into the corn market, I think the corn market did quite well closing higher, very similar to what happened on Monday. Monday we had a big jump up, closed a penny or two lower, wallowed around a little bit on Tuesday, and we giddied up again yesterday. So my guess is that, yeah, there could be some consolidation, but I don't think this is the complete of the second drive. We had the first drive here between pre-acreage report low of 343 up to 410. Now we've had a move from 376 on up here to this 440. And we'll see whether or not that completes that second drive. But I think there's another drive on up, and I think that'll go right on up through the 4.5 area.
Dan, thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group out of Decatur, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and Moline. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
In today's agricultural news, President Obama made an announcement in late June that an agreement with Russia on U.S. poultry exports had been reached, but now Russia has added new requirements that say U.S. poultry producers and companies will have to go through audits and inspections before Russia will import their goods. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says the new requirements are unnecessary and inappropriate.
We're in the process of communicating with them about the fact that this doesn't meet the standards or the requirements that we agreed upon. We're going to continue to advocate for that, and we, if necessary, we'll be asking the president to intercede again.
That was U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. U.S. Trade Representative Ron Kirk says he doesn't think it's too much to ask for Russia to live up to an agreement signed just 3 weeks ago.
We thought the matter was put to bed. We have poultry packed and ready to go. Then we learn of this newest challenge. So one, I know Secretary Vilsack and our team are reaching out to the Russians again to see if we can't get them to adhere to the agreement they've made.
Over the last 3 years, U.S. poultry exports to Russia averaged more than $800 million in value, making Russia the single largest U.S. export market. The poultry industry represents some 500,000 U.S. jobs. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., where a letter has been sent to Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, and USDA Inspector General Phyllis Fong with concerns over the beef checkoff and how dollars are being spent by the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Specifically, the groups are requesting that USDA immediately freeze all checkoff accounts managed or controlled by NCBA, immediately suspend the checkoff contract between the Beef Association and the CBB, and immediately conduct a full and complete investigation and audit into the National Cattlemen Beef Association's fiscal management of checkoff funds for a period to include at least the past 5 years, take any and all action necessary to redress any violations, noncompliance, and fraud that may be discovered, and reimburse the checkoff in full for each dollar that may be found to have been misappropriated, and to take action to completely separate the National Cattlemen's Beef Association from the Federation of State Beef Councils. For its part, the beef checkoff has received a lot of attention lately, and while it hasn't been positive attention, a recent producer survey looking at the awareness of attitudes towards and concerns about the checkoff program found 72% of beef and dairy producers approved of the checkoff, with 6 out of 10 believing it's well-managed, contributes to profitability of the operations, and represents their viewpoints. Well, Senators Chuck Grassley and Russ Feingold have introduced legislation that would set a limit of $250,000 per farm payments in an attempt to get farm program payments to family farmers and save the federal treasury more than $1 billion over the next 10 years. The bill specifically caps direct payments at $40,000, countercyclical payments at $60,000, and marketing loan gains, forfeitures, loan deficiency payments, and commodity certificates at $150,000. It would also improve the USDA standard for determining which farmers are actively engaged in their operations. Beyond setting the payment limit, the Grassley-Feingold Rural America Preservation Act will simplify the complicated legal games now played to avoid existing limitations. And finally today, the number of farmers markets continue to increase across the United States. As part of the National Farmers Market Week, the U.S. Department of Agriculture has announced that the National Farmers Market Directory has seen an increase of 16% over 2009, now listing more than 6,100 operational farmers markets. The top five states with the most farmers markets include California, New York, Illinois, Michigan, and Iowa, respectively. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. Please do visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Up next, a commentary from Amy Rochkus. She says it's time to re-up some tax incentives for biofuels.
Clean, renewable, domestic energy will help America achieve long-term economic growth, create a cleaner environment, and shield our economy from unreliable foreign energy sources. Today, farmers are playing a bigger role in supplying our nation with the energy it needs through the production of agricultural-based renewable energy resources. A key role in the development of renewable energy is tax incentives. The successful development of our nation's ethanol industry stands as a testament to the effectiveness of tax incentives for renewable energy. This industry, which was launched with the aid of tax incentives during the 1980s, now has the capacity to produce 9 billion gallons of fuel. Tax incentives have proven valuable in promoting the production of biodiesel made from oilseed crops and animal fats. Tax credits designed to spur the development of electricity produced from biomass and wind are also effective in reducing our dependence on fossil fuels. Unfortunately, a number of renewable energy tax cuts will expire. These existing renewable energy tax incentives are temporary and will expire on December 31st, include the volumetric ethanol excise tax credit, small ethanol producer tax credit, and the advanced energy investment credit. Other tax incentives include cellulosic biofuels, production tax credit for power from wind and biomass, and a tax incentive for alternative energy fuel pumps, all have varying expiration dates from now until January 2013. Long-term extensions are needed to boost renewable technologies and support the development of the market infrastructure necessary to make these technologies more competitive. In addition, the long-term extension of renewable energy credits will ensure stability and attract the capital necessary to realize the benefits of long-term planning. Farm Bureau supports the extension and expansion of existing renewable energy tax incentives to expand the production of cellulosic fuels, cellulosic generated power, and production of biogas. New and expanded incentives that encourage a more diverse base for cellulosic fuels are needed to reduce price competition for crops that can serve as energy sources and serve as food and feed. This is Amy Rochkus with the Shelby County Farm Bureau.
Amy Rochkus' comments are her own and do not necessarily reflect those of this station. In just a couple of minutes, I'll return when we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Pete Levitt should be here. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Support comes from Taylor & Martin Auctions, which is holding an auction of over 100 pieces of large late-model ag equipment from John Deere, Case, and Cat on Tuesday, August 10th at 10 a.m. at Progress City in Decatur, Illinois. Online bidding is available at tmilive.com.
It's National Waffle Day. It's also National Mustard Day. At first, mustard was considered a medicinal plant. In ancient times, the Greeks used mustard as a remedy for scorpion stings. Prepared mustard for culinary purposes may date back to the early Romans, who ground mustard seeds and mixed them with wine into a paste. On this day in agricultural history in 1855, William Dimes was born. An English meteorologist, he was the first to invent an instrument to measure both the velocity and direction of wind. In 1909, the first corporation tax was passed by the U.S. Congress. In 1914, the first electric traffic lights were installed in Cleveland, Ohio, at Euclid Avenue and East 105th Street. And in 1962, Marilyn Monroe died, an American actress. In 1947, she won a curious contest. She was crowned the first artichoke queen of Castroville, California. The little-known Hollywood starlet, born Norma Jean Baker, had just begun using Marilyn Monroe as her name, although she did not legally change her name until 1956, just 6 years before she died. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Thursday afternoon. Time to check the agricultural weather forecast. Meteorologist Pete Levitt is on the phone line. Thanks for being with us, Pete. Not as hot, not as humid at this point, although we do have a heat index of 92. It's just 88 degrees outside this afternoon, and that seems almost nice, given where we've been recently. Can we expect a better cool down yet?
Oh, yes, I think so. The dew points are still up in the 60s across most of central Illinois, and they'll be dropping down into the 50s late this evening and tonight. And that's what's really going to make the air mass feel quite a bit cooler. Not that the temperatures will be all that cool overnight, but you'll get lows down into the low 60s. Tonight and tomorrow should be a beautiful day with lower humidities, high temperatures tomorrow, probably up in the low to mid-80s, and again on Saturday. So it looks like the next couple of days look very nice. Most of the precipitation will be shoved to the south and stay south of the Ohio River Valley during the next 48 to 72 hours.
Have there been some changes in the way the weather looks in the recent hours that suggest more rainfall in the Midwest than had been previously thought?
Well, I don't think we're going to. No, I don't see that, at least not in the short term, Todd. I do see a system firing up, though, Saturday night and Sunday and producing some pretty good shower activity. Most of this will be from about I-80 northward Saturday night and Sunday, an area that's had abundant moisture, maybe too much moisture. Iowa's been the portion of the belt that has really had a very wet season in here, and we've had some flooding there, as you know. But on Saturday night and Sunday, we'll see another round come across northern Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan, and northern Illinois. I don't think it will dip down very far into central Illinois. And then that will skirt on by to the north of us, and we start to see some heat cranking in by the middle of next week again. We're going to have another brief shot at hot air during the middle to the latter part of next week. And looking ahead, where the forecasts are, as usual, much more questionable, it looks like we will get another chance to cool off by the end of next week.
So the rainfall in the southern two-thirds of the Midwest fairly limited in that case over the next week?
Not in the southern two-thirds, down to the Ohio Valley. No, where they're going to see some good rain, and they need it, is in the agricultural delta region. That's Arkansas, Tennessee, Mississippi,
right.
Northern Louisiana. That's an area that's really suffered from dryness and where we've seen some stress in the major production crops. And they will get some rain, but I don't think that's going to be very long-lived. I think we're going to see some of that ending again as we get into the middle of next week. But this will be a very important respite for that southern portion of the belt. Central portion should be pretty dry, as we say, for the next few days. Showers to the north, showers to the south. But further south, everything looks to be a little bit wetter and a little bit better for crops.
All right. Thanks much.
My pleasure.
Pete Leavitt, agricultural meteorologist, joins us here on the Closing Market Report. Stay with us for the farming world.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
You're listening to the Farming World News and Interviews from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on the phone line with us today from the National Pork Board in Des Moines, Iowa. Stacy Rebels, she's the manager of certification programs for the National Pork Board. Ms. Rebels, thank you so much for being with us today. We do appreciate you taking the time.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for having me.
What does the manager at the manager of certification programs at the National Pork Board do?
Well, I'm responsible for the day-to-day management and oversight of the industry, the three key industry certification programs: Pork Quality Assurance Plus, also known as PQA Plus, Youth Pork Quality Assurance Plus, or Youth PQA Plus, and the Transport Quality Assurance, or TQA. And so I manage the day-to-day administration and delivery of those programs, as well as development of all of the material that go to support them.
And two questions up front. Who's the target audience for those programs? And maybe you can start with a broader target audience. And then what is the National Pork Board?
Sure. The PQA Plus and Youth PQA Plus program is really, it is our food safety and animal well-being education program. And so it is intended for anyone who works in the production of pork. So that's all pork producers, owners, employees, and anyone that may be involved in any way with producing pork. The Transport Quality Assurance Program, TQA, is intended for anyone who transports or handles pigs during unloading or unloading, and is intended to ensure the well-being of animals while loading, unloading, and in between during transport.
And the National Pork Board is in existence for what reason?
The National Pork Board has three main charges. That is to promote domestic demand for pork, as well as to implement research priorities for the pork industry and deliver education programs for pork producers.
And so why do we have the PQA programs then?
PQA is a way for pork producers to learn what's current and best practices in their industry. It's a way to ensure on-farm food safety of pork that's produced, as well as ensure the well-being of our animals. It's important to be able to demonstrate that pork producers are involved in this program to our customers, folks like food service and retail industries, as well as the end consumer, are becoming increasingly concerned with where their pork comes from and how it's produced, and they just want to know that it's being done right.
How many participate in the PQA programs?
We have currently there are approximately 49,000 pork producers certified in PQA Plus, as well as over 35,000 youth that are certified through Youth PQA Plus.
All right, so now let's take up these PQA or Pork Quality Assurance programs. What are they designed to do and to aid the producers and the youth and the transport folks with?
They're intended to provide producers and their employees with best practices and correct procedures and practices to use on farm in order to ensure food safety and animal well-being. So, for example, the PQA Plus program would cover a topic such as using appropriate withdrawal times when using medications. It also covers topics such as responsible antibiotic use and using a veterinarian client-patient relationship to manage the health of the herd. Those types of things are important for ensuring food safety. And then in the program, we also cover things like ensuring that animals have appropriate body space, that they have a correct body condition score, things like that that are important for the animal's well-being are also covered in the program. So really it's to ensure that the product that we're producing is safe and that it's done in a responsible way that's important for the animal's well-being.
Does the consumer know in any way about the certification program, or is it a program mostly for internal use? Is it a program that the packers look for when they're purchasing product, that the retailers look for when they're purchasing from the wholesalers? What good does the program do?
Yes. Well, I would say that the most important audience that this program has, number one is producers, to make sure that everyone is doing things, according to best practices and science. But then number two, it's very important that we be able to demonstrate to retailers and food service that pork producers are doing these things, because they are becoming increasingly interested in how pork is produced. They hear the same talking points and messages from animal rights groups and others that are not necessarily working with our industry, but rather against it. And so this is a way for us to be able to give them something to rely on, some information that they can go back to those other outside groups who may be trying to work against us and say, pork producers, they are doing the right thing. They are raising their pork in a responsible manner.
Okay, so I am a pork producer, and I come to you, and I'd like to be in the PQA Plus program. What's the first thing you tell me?
The first thing that I would recommend you do is go to our website, and that is www.pork.org. There's a link at the very top of the page that says certifications. And there at that link, you can get information on PQA Plus, Youth PQA Plus, and TQA. And the key thing to do there is to use our locator tool found at that website and find a PQA Plus or TQA advisor in your area. And that advisor is who will deliver the training for you. They will come out and conduct your site assessment and then enter your site assessment data into the system so that you will officially be designated as having been site assessed. If you don't have internet access or just don't have time to hop on the internet, you can also call our 800 number. That number is 1-800-456-7675. And the Pork Checkoff Service Center will be happy to help you and to answer any other questions that you might have about the programs.
Okay, so I've gone to the website. I've found an advisor. They've come out. What do they do with me? And it looks to me like this was modeled after the HACCP, or the Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point programs that are used throughout the food production industry as food safety. So what happens once I take those first steps and they come out to the farm?
Sure. PQA, the original PQA program was developed back in 1989, and it was based on HACCP principles. And it was strictly, at that time, a food safety program. In 2007, animal well-being was added to the content, and at that time, the site assessment piece of the program was also added. And so when you go through the training program, your training, the content will focus on those various HACCP principles, everything that you do on farm that will impact food safety. And then it will also talk you through the various care and well-being principles that are looked at when assessing the animal well-being. And so those care and well-being principles are really what is assessed when a PQA Plus advisor comes out to the farm. And so they'll walk through and they'll look at your records to see if you have a veterinarian-client-patient relationship. They'll look at your medication and treatment records, your caretaker training, your emergency action plan, and an emergency backup system. Those are all records and emergency support. They'll also look to see that you have some sort of records that you have observed the animals on a daily basis. Daily observation records are very important. They'll then take a look at the animals. They'll do a physical evaluation of the animals, look at things like lameness, skin lesions, wounds, and swine behavior in general. They'll look at body condition score as well as body space for the animals. Then they'll also take a look to see that you have a written euthanasia plan and that your plan is done correctly based on the guide that is produced by the ASV, the American Association of Swine Veterinarians. It's important to make sure that those guidelines are in place. They'll look to make sure that the facilities are in good repair, flooring, fencing, equipment, all of those things. Next, they'll make sure that you have information and are doing things according to proper animal handling best practices. They'll look at ventilation to make sure that the temperature and the air quality within the barn is appropriate. And then finally, they'll ensure that there are no willful acts of abuse that are occurring on that site.
So as I gather, the PQA and then the PQA Plus program different in just really one way. PQA is the program that took care of, and I'll say it simply, I think, the quality of the pork or the inputs into the pork, what that animal was ingesting, how it was treated in terms of medicines and such, so that eventual pork product would be safe and under HACCP programs would be safe. And then the PQA Plus added to that the environmental or living space of the animal and transport as well.
Right. Yes. The PQA Plus, really when that plus was added, it was due to the animal well-being factors that were added into the program as well as the site assessment. Prior to when PQA Plus was rolled out, there was not a site assessment component to the program. It was strictly a training program.
Who comes up with the guidelines?
The guidelines are based on best industry information. Our science and technology department here at the National Pork Board, who manages all of our research as well as all of our technical committees, they provide all of the content for the program and guide the program to make sure that it is technically and scientifically sound.
What are the places like PETA and environment and animal activists think about the PQA Plus program? Do they think it's okay, a step in the right direction? Do they not care? Do they think it's just a front? What do they say about it?
Well, I haven't actually heard what they think about it. I would say that those types of groups, PETA and the Humane Society of the United States, their goal is to eliminate animal agriculture, so they have a very vegan agenda, and so this program won't necessarily help them accomplish that agenda.
Okay, so they probably wouldn't care about the program one way or the other. I didn't know whether they had looked at the program and whether you'd heard feedback from them or not. We'll have some more discussion about the youth program and the transportation program when we come back. We're talking with Stacy Revels this afternoon. She's the manager of certification programs for the National Pork Board.
It's National Waffle Day. It's also National Mustard Day. At first, mustard was considered a medicinal plant. In ancient times, the Greeks used mustard as a remedy for scorpion stings. Prepared mustard for culinary purposes may date back to the early Romans, who ground mustard seeds and mixed them with wine into a paste. On this day in agricultural history in 1855, William Dimes was born. An English meteorologist, he was the first to invent an instrument to measure both the velocity and direction of wind. In 1909, the first corporation tax was passed by the U.S. Congress. In 1914, the first electric traffic lights were installed in Cleveland, Ohio, at Euclid Avenue and East 105th Street. And in 1962, Marilyn Monroe died, an American actress. In 1947, she won a curious contest. She was crowned the first artichoke queen of Castroville, California. The little-known Hollywood starlet, born Norma Jean Baker, had just begun using Marilyn Monroe as her name, although she did not legally change her name until 1956, just 6 years before she died. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're talking today with Stacy Revel. She's the manager of certification programs at the National Pork Board. Our discussion centering on their PQA, or Pork Quality Assurance Programs, and PQA Plus. There's a couple of others, transportation and youth. Let's take up transportation, Ms. Revels. That's getting the animal, I suppose, from the production facility to the processing facility. Are there other things involved, and what does it mean?
Yes, so Transport Quality Assurance, or TQA, involves everything that the pig might encounter during transportation. So everything from loading to unloading, and the transportation that happens in between. It covers topics such as basic pig behavior and handling of the pig, loading and unloading best practices, transportation such as space recommendations, weather conditions, fitness of the pig and whether it's in proper condition to transport to begin with, biosecurity considerations, having an emergency response plan and what to do in the event that an emergency should occur when on the road. We also cover the laws and regulations that are important for transporters to be aware of, as well as just general attitude and rules and responsibilities for transporters. So those are kind of the main topics that we cover within TQA.
So we had 49,000 in the PQA Plus program. How many in TQA?
We have approximately 27,000 folks that are certified in TQA, and so those may be not only transporters or haulers, but they could also be folks that work on farm that are responsible for loading pigs, or even folks that work at packing plants and are responsible for unloading pigs.
So this is all aimed at the welfare of the animal as it's being transported from one place to the other. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. Animal well-being during transport is the primary goal of TQA.
And then talk about the youth program for me.
Youth PQA Plus is really, it mirrors the content that's found within PQA Plus, but it's geared toward a younger audience. We have a large youth population involved in producing swine. Many of them produce them maybe one or two pigs a year for their local county fairs. And some may produce, you know, quite a few more than that and are involved in showing livestock on a national level. But really that Youth PQA Plus program is intended for anyone who's involved with producing pigs, whether it's for show or maybe on their family's farm, and anyone between the ages of 8 years old and 19 years old.
And how many do you have that participate in this program?
There are just over 35,000 youth that are certified in Youth PQA Plus. And that's in addition to youth that may be certified within their state multi-species quality assurance programs. There are six states that have a multi-species quality assurance program, so programs that might include beef or sheep, poultry, in some cases, production. They might have programs that encompass more than just pork quality assurance.
And how's this program delivered?
The Youth PQA Plus program is delivered by extension educators, ag educators, and veterinarians. And it is administered a lot like the Pork Quality Assurance Plus or PQA Plus program, where an advisor is responsible for educating youth, conducting training sessions, and making sure that youth have access to all of the information that they need to produce pork in a responsible manner.
So when they do this, and you're talking about juniors or youth, and they maybe have one or two hogs that, as you said, they're raising for the county fair, what kinds of things are they taught?
The information that they're taught is really exactly the same as that in the PQA Plus program. So we go through the same food safety guidelines, you know, responsible antibiotic use, veterinarian client patient relationship, those types of things. But within the youth training, the materials are written at a slightly different level to accommodate the reading level of most youth. And in addition, we also provide recommended activities and things that trainers can incorporate into the training to make it a little bit more interactive and designed specifically for youth.
Have you been able to assess whether this program has been valuable or not?
Oh, absolutely. This program has continued to strengthen in terms of numbers of folks that are becoming certified in it, as well as many of your national and even local fairs are beginning to require certification in Youth PQA Plus. Fairs see it as a way to make sure that their youth are getting the education that they need to produce pork in a responsible manner. And it's just a excellent education program for youth, especially those who may not have a lot of experience already with livestock. It's a good way for them to learn basic principles of animal husbandry and animal care.
Ms. Revels, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
You're welcome. Stacy Revels is the manager of certification programs at the National Pork Board. We've been talking about the PQA, or Pork Quality Assurance Programs, that the Pork Board oversees. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to The Farming World from Illinois Public Media.